Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
We've had more than a week now to react to the news that Justice Souter is retiring. There goes the judge. Maybe that's the song we should have used at the top of the hour. Vacancy on the court. Time to think about the direction and the personalities who are both possible justices and the personalities who are already there. David Souter, of course, a soft-spoken fellow, nominee of President Bush the senior. He disappointed a lot of conservatives, expected to be more of a moderate than he's turned out to be. The expectations aim foiled by justices all the time. His replacement, who will that be? Lots to talk about, both in terms of legal doctrine, personality, and the names that are already being floated. We could have a name officially from the Obama administration as early as today. That's the report. Yeah. Todd Zwillick was telling us that all week. Adam Liptak, Supreme Court correspondent for the New York Times, joins us now. Adam, thanks for being with us.
Good to be here.
And from Charlottesville, Virginia, Dahlia Lithwick, the senior legal correspondent for Slate Magazine, is with us. Dahlia, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Adam, let's begin with you. Souter was a quiet fellow, certainly a smart justice, but would you say his quietness meant that he had no impact on the court?
No, I wouldn't say that. And he was also on the bench. He was hardly quiet. He was a very active questioner. And this notion that he's, you know, a reclusive, weird hermit is not quite right. But he was a reliably liberal vote, which means that whoever Obama appoints will fill a liberal slot with a liberal slot, and it won't change the fundamental dynamic of the court. So this high drama we're about to enter into, in some sense, will be empty at its core.
Right. But it is safe to say that if personality is the gauge, Souter is the polar opposite of this fellow. Listen.
It was Al Gore who made it a judicial question. It was he who brought it into the Florida courts. We didn't go looking for trouble. It was he who said, I want this to be decided by the courts. What are we supposed to say? Oh, not important enough.
There he is, brimming with personality. Antonin Scalia, the justice on the Supreme Court, with probably the highest visibility. There he is on 60 Minutes. Adam, what do you think contributes to Scalia's profile? Is it impact on the court, or is he just a fascinating character?
He's a big personality, but he's also a legal scholar who has a theory about how to decide cases that has taken root on the conservative side of not only the court but the entire legal system. So unlike Souter, who was more of a common law judge looking at the facts, deciding one case at a time without an overarching theory, Scalia's theory that you have to look at the original meaning of the text of the Constitution and of statutes really has been quite influential.
Influential in the sense that it's helped decide cases, or influential in the sense that he gets a lot of quotable quotes in conservative magazines?
Oh, and in a third sense, too, in the sense of making other judges look at cases through that lens. So you saw in the Second Amendment case last year, both sides of the court trying to figure out what the ambiguous words of the Second Amendment actually meant at the time they were written. Hmm.
Dahlia Lithwick, so in terms of personality, as we begin to look at the people that the Obama administration may nominate to replace Justice Souter, what's the range so far?
Well, Obama's telegraphed a couple of things. The word he keeps using when he talks about what qualities he's seeking in the Souter replacement, he keeps using language like empathy. He wants somebody who gets it, who knows what it's like to be a pregnant teenage girl, who knows what it's like to try to support a family. So I think a couple of things are compressed into that idea of empathy. One thing is he's looking for somebody, I think, who's outside the bubble. And he's said that before. He's said one of his ideal jurists is someone like Earl Warren, you know, who came up through the political system, not necessarily through the courts of appeals.
Governor of California,
Right. Okay. Somebody who's sort of been there out on the streets and knows what life is like on the ground. So I think part of empathy is that. I think part of empathy also is, and this goes to Adam's point, somebody who has a sort of less, forgive me for the shorthand, but Vulcan worldview than the political right of the court. You know, a notion that people matter, who they are matters, that it's not, you know, input data outcomes, the answer to a case, but a little bit more of a sense of how the real world operates and what real people need. So that's the sort of range of I think, personality quality, somebody who comes from outside the system and somebody who's got an evolved jurisprudential doctrine, but one that isn't quite as cold and perhaps bloodless as the originalism, textualism that Adam describes on the right of the court.
And Dahlia and Adam, you can jump in too if you want. We're asking people to call in 877-8-MY-TAKE and tell us what their personal litmus test would be if they were allowed to pick a justice. We've seen things come up about the value of states' rights, questions over the legacy of civil rights and whether you need to continue busing, of course, abortion, all these things come up on a repeated basis. Now we're seeing gay marriage come up. What's your sense of the make or break issues, Dahlia first and then Adam, where there could be very close decisions in the future?
Well, I think the most important thing to keep in mind is what Adam said, which is ultimately this is going to have no net effect on the court. This is still going to be at the end of a rancorous, hideous confirmation summer, a 4-4 court with Anthony Kennedy in the middle. So the actual person, I don't know that they can make that much of an impact. Certainly the list that you mentioned, gay rights issues, race is becoming incredibly important again this term on the court. Abortion will always be there. Those hot-button social issues, church-state, will be there. But I think the thing that could change with the composition of the court is that there are certainly a lot of people who are looking for a progressive who, even though they would swap out a liberal vote for a liberal vote with Souter, would be able to go toe-to-toe doctrinally with the court's right wing, who really would re-energize the debate about how we look at the Constitution. So I think that regardless of the issues, the specific issues that come up, the thing that's exciting potentially to progressives is the notion that there'll be somebody on the court who can really take Antonin Scalia
that role? Kathleen Sullivan? Pamela Carlin? Both at Stanford?
Those are both, I think, folks whose names are on the shortlist for good reason. Both of them are extremely knowledgeable constitutional scholars who have a fully evolved constitutional theory from the left. So I think those are names that get people
also,
excited.
They're also, Dahlia, I'm sure you'll agree, lively personalities, collegial, capable of forging consensus, reaching out to people. And as Dahlia said, there's really only one person you really need to reach out to, and that's Justice Anthony Kennedy, who holds the swing vote in almost all the important cases.
So that's your first dinner, I guess, right, if you get on the court?
Well, Adam, I want to go back to something that Dahlia said. Dahlia, you called Souter a liberal, at least for the purposes of his votes. Some people might think of him more as a moderate. What do you think, Adam?
By the current standards on the court, he was a full-fledged member of this court's liberal wing. This court's liberal wing, by historical standards, is quite moderate. So that 30, 40 years ago, you had liberals like William Brennan, Thurgood Marshall, Earl Warren, who were really capable of trying to do things with the Constitution that really changed the country. And the current liberal justices are incrementalists, and don't have that kind of boldness and vision.
Well, I can hear in both of your voices a sense of anticipation that, getting someone to argue with Antonin Scalia is going to be very entertaining in the Supreme Court, and that you're both looking forward to something like that. But from the perspective of the nominee, is it possible that the nominee doesn't want to be pigeonholed in some way, that maybe, their aspiration is to be more like Kennedy rather than to be a predictable arguer from the left, Adam and then Dahlia?
Well, everyone's self-image, and especially judges, is that they're completely independent, they're their own person, and so on. It turns out, though, that most people end up filling a kind of role. And, it's hard to imagine Obama appointing someone who would not fit in with the four members of the relatively liberal wing of the current court. So on the one hand, the person certainly is going to want to be his or her own person. And yet, if all you do is live up to what is almost certainly the aspiration of President Obama, is if nothing else to put a reliably liberal vote on the court, it's hard to imagine that person replacing Kennedy. And Kennedy also is very self-conscious about his Hamlet-like agonizing central role, and that's not something he would give up lightly.
Dahlia, last word.
just, I think Adam flicked at an important point that's really worth driving home, and that is whoever this person is, the quality that they're going to need is persuasion more than force of personality. They need to bring over this fifth vote. That's a quality that William Brennan had, that Earl Warren had. Actually, that's a quality that Souter lacked, and actually it's a quality that Scalia lacks. So I think the ability to persuade, to slightly modify your view in order to get a fifth vote, that's a critical quality, almost more important than your own jurisprudential view.
Fascinating stuff. Persuasion beats a profile in the popular culture. We'll leave it there. I'd like to thank Dahlia Lithwick, Slate's senior legal correspondent, and New York Times Supreme Court correspondent Adam Liptak for that discussion. Thanks, guys.